Good day out there, everybody, and welcome to the Then and Now podcast. This is Season 2, Episode 5, and I'm your host, John Shomo. There's a lot going on right now. I've had to redo some of what I was going to talk about today because of recent events, but we'll tackle that here as we go on. Hopefully you're all doing well. First, we'll go through the facts for the week for the dates March 26th through April 1st. Then we'll deal with a few topics, one of them pretty sensitive, should have been dealt with more sensitively. And we'll also have our three good questions segment. We'll answer the three good questions that we gave you all last week in episode 4 of season 2. Let's start where we usually do here. We'll go to the facts for the day, starting with March 26th. On that date in 1979 in Salt Lake City, Utah, the Michigan State Spartans men's basketball team defeated Indiana State 75-64 to win the NCAA Men's College Basketball Championship. It was the most watched college basketball game in history. That record still stands, by the way. Nielsen reported 35.1 million viewers for that game. Why? The two protagonists in that game for Michigan State, it was Irvin Magic Johnson, and for Indiana State, it was Larry Bird. They would go on that summer to join the Los Angeles Lakers and Boston Celtics, respectively, and they continued their marvelous rivalry throughout their pro careers. But everybody kind of knew, watching that game that night in 1979, that here we are. These two guys are the real deal. And Irvin's Michigan State Spartans had a better team. They had a guy named Greg Kelser, who was a very, very good college player, played some years in the NBA. Larry Bird did not have anybody like that on his team at Indiana State. That kind of was the difference. But people knew that those were the guys, and those guys would then kind of revive the National Basketball Association real quickly as they joined the Lakers and Celtics. Another basketball note: on March 26th in 1987, the National High School Basketball Association adopted a three-point line for high school basketball. That's a pretty big change. I kind of wish we had had a three-point line when I was playing. I shot those shots anyway, even though they were only worth two. Okay, birthdays on March 26th. Kenny Chesney, the country artist, will be 57. Steven Tyler of Aerosmith will be 77. The great Diana Ross, first of the Supremes and then a fabulous acting and singing career on her own. Diana Ross will be 81. Journalist Bob Woodward of the Washington Post will be 82. He might be busy right now. There's a story breaking that kind of is right up his alley. We'll talk about that in a couple minutes. And the former Speaker of the House, currently still a congresswoman from San Francisco, California, Nancy Pelosi, will be 85 on March 26th. She probably needs to step down after this term. That's just my opinion. I can't really tell her what to do, but I think her time has come and gone. She's served very, very well over her career, but everybody's got a time where they need to move on, and I think she's probably about there. Okay, March 27th, the first NCAA men's basketball championship game in the first tournament occurred on that date in 1939. Oregon defeated the Ohio State Buckeyes 46-33 in the first men's basketball tournament championship game. Here's the irony there. The first college football playoff, played after the 2014 season, saw Oregon play Ohio State in the championship game. And we know that one turned out differently. It was 42-20 for the Buckeyes. And by golly, Ohio State and Oregon played in the first 12-team college football playoff just this past January 1st, and the Buckeyes routed the Ducks in that game at the Rose Bowl on their way to the national championship. So Oregon and Ohio State, now Big Ten co-members, amazingly, have a history there of being in championship games against one another. Birthdays for March 27th include the former Giants great Buster Posey, their great catcher, who now is an officer in the Giants organization. He is 38, and Mariah Carey will be 56 on March 27th. Moving to March 28th, on that date in 1979, a couple days after the Bird Magic game, there was a partial meltdown of one of the two nuclear reactors at the Three Mile Island nuclear power plant near Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. This was the closest we've come in the United States to having a, you know, nuclear disaster at a power plant, I guess is the only way to put it. It was a few very tense days around Harrisburg and really across the country, but that meltdown was contained. That reactor sits idle to this day. There's another reactor working still at Three Mile Island, providing power to the Harrisburg area. A couple of birthdays for March 28th. Lady Gaga will be 39, and Reba McEntire will be 70. Moving to March 29th, on that date in 1961, the 23rd Amendment to the Constitution was ratified by the states. That amendment gave residents of the Washington, D.C. city, the District of Columbia, if you will, three electoral votes in presidential elections all through our history, up through and including the election that put John Kennedy in the White House in my lifetime. Residents of D.C., where the president lives at the White House, did not get the right to vote in presidential elections. That seems to be a really big oversight, which thankfully was fixed by the 23rd Amendment. D.C. gets three electoral votes. The 1982 very notable NCAA men's basketball final was played in New Orleans on March 29, 1982. The North Carolina Tar Heels defeated the Georgetown Hoyas 63-62 on an 18-foot jump shot from the left side by a freshman named Michael Jordan for the Tar Heels. We would hear more about him later. That was Dean Smith's first of two NCAA titles as a head coach. Also on March 29th in 1984, in the middle of the night, moving vans pulled up to the Baltimore Colts facility outside of Baltimore in Maryland and moved the Colts to Indianapolis in the dark of the night. Just, you know, as irony as things would work out, a decade or so later, the Cleveland Browns moved into Baltimore. We lost our team in a similar shenanigans kind of deal. It wasn't moving vans in the middle of the night, but Baltimore then benefited from the Browns moving there, and they have the Baltimore Ravens now. But they got ripped off too. The Colts were really stolen from Baltimore in the dark of the night, as it was. Birthdays for March 29th include the 10th president, John Tyler, who became president upon the death of William Henry Harrison. John Tyler, born on March 29th, 1790. Cy Young, the man whom the award is named after, born near here, New Comerstown, Ohio, down near Janaid and Hutton and all that, on March 29th, 1867. He won over 500 games in the big leagues. That one will never be broken, folks. Also, the founder of Walmart, Sam Walton, born March 28th, 1918. On March 30th, in 1870, the 15th Amendment to the Constitution was ratified, which allowed newly freed African-American men the right to vote, over 21 years old, that is. The 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments were known as the Civil War Amendments. They happened in the 5 years following the end of the war. My college professor, Dr. Mushkat at the University of Akron, taught me that those were remembered very easily, free citizen vote, 13, 14, 15. Still remember that after all these years. Thanks, Dr. Mushkat. On March 30th, 1981, President Reagan, along with three others, were shot and wounded in an assassination attempt outside the Washington Hilton Hotel. President Reagan had just given a speech there to a union group. He was shot, taken to George Washington Hospital in very serious condition. Thankfully, he survived. The other three men did too, although his press secretary, James Brady, was very badly wounded and very badly affected by that shooting. Birthdays today, on March 30th, include Vincent van Gogh, the great artist, born on that date in 1853. Secretariat, the greatest racehorse I've ever seen, was born on March 30th, 1970. Secretariat won the Triple Crown in 1973. Jerry Lucas, former Ohio State Buckeye great, led them to the national championship in basketball in 1960, was a great pro player for the Cincinnati Royals and the New York Knicks, Jerry Lucas, still around, a memory expert. You should see some of his videos. Go on YouTube and look for Jerry Lucas memory videos. It's amazing. Jerry Lucas will turn 85. Happy birthday to Jerry Lucas. Eric Clapton, the guitar genius, will be 80 on March 30th. Also, there's some good birthdays on that date. March 31st, speaking of good birthdays, the Eiffel Tower opened in Paris on March 31st, 1889, as part of an exhibit for the World's Fair. Daylight saving time, still a controversial subject, really. We just switched back to it here this month. Daylight saving time was first used during World War I. March 31st, 1918 was the first switchover. That's still a pretty controversial topic, really. Birthdays on March 31st. I'll save the best for last. Johann Sebastian Bach, the great composer, born on that date in 1685. Mr. Hockey, Gordie Howe, born March 31st, 1928. Former Vice President and almost President of the United States, Al Gore from Tennessee, will be 77. And my pop, Eldon Shomo, born March 31st, 1920. Moving to our last day for this week, April 1st, April Fool's Day. Don't get fooled on April 1st. On that date in 1970, President Nixon signed a ban of cigarette advertising over radio and television into law. It took effect at the end of 1970, December 31st, 1970. That would have been the last day you could have seen an ad for cigarettes on television, for instance. Birthdays on April 1st. Justice Samuel Alito, one of the 9 U.S. Supreme Court justices, will be 75. The late Phil Niekro, the knuckleball expert, born in Southeast Ohio on April 1st, 1939. He and his brother Joe both pitched in the major leagues. Phil's a Hall of Famer. And MSNBC anchor Rachel Maddow will be 52 on April 1st. Those are our birthdays and events for this week. Now, I had a segment queued up, ready to go, as I prepared for this week's episode yesterday, about the Department of Education and what it does, since it's certainly in the news as maybe being taken down, if you will, by President Trump. But we have to scrap that one because something happened yesterday, as we speak here, Monday this week, that really is alarming, and I have to address it here for a couple of minutes at least. Security, are you kidding me? We have in our country, in certain places, secure rooms where people can go who need to access very highly classified information. These rooms are known as SCIFs. That's short for Sensitive Compartmented Information Facility. Okay. A highly secure room or area designed to protect classified information from unauthorized access and electronic surveillance. For instance, former White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said on television last night that she had a SCIF put in her house while she was working at the White House for President Biden. You're not allowed to take a cell phone into a SCIF wherever the SCIF is, whether it's in the Capitol building or the White House or your kitchen or whatever. Well, what happened yesterday? Well, it came out that members of the Trump National Security Team were coordinating highly sensitive war plans, plans for a U.S. air attack on Houthi positions in Yemen, which the attack actually happened a little over a week ago. They were coordinating these highly sensitive war plans, which would, if known by bad actors, would certainly put the lives of our pilots at risk. On the unsecure app Signal. Now, I'm not familiar with Signal. I had to look all this stuff up. But Signal is an unsecured communications app. The group that they put together to talk outside of the SCIF, which should never happen, included Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, Vice President J.D. Vance, White House National Security Advisor Mike Waltz, and Secretary of State Marco Rubio, among others. Added one day this weekend, maybe Saturday, I think, was the editor-in-chief of The Atlantic magazine, Jeffrey Goldberg. Now, his reaction was, really, what am I doing in this chat about an attack that hasn't happened yet? It was 2 hours out before the attack was commenced, about an air raid, a war act, if you will, by United States Air Forces. He got out of there after a while, and it's extremely dangerous and embarrassing, I think, to the Trump administration that they're that careless with national security issues. I can't imagine this happening. A couple of reactions that I got this morning, and the second one is really cogent. The first one's from Pete Buttigieg, the former Secretary of Transportation. His quote, and I'm quoting him here, okay, please understand. His quote is, "The highest level of fuck up imaginable. These people cannot keep America safe." That was his post on Instagram. And the most interesting response was from Hillary Clinton, who, if you remember, a whole lot was made of her 30,000 emails. What about her emails? What about her emails in 2016? Her reaction was simply, "You have to be kidding me," which I thought was very well said by her. Not that she was all in the right in 2016, don't get me wrong, but that really pales in comparison to this. This bottom line is, this should never happen. There are places, and these people know there are places, where they must go to discuss highly secure information like that. And for them to just be texting back and forth on it, shame on them. It puts our brave men and women in danger. Thankfully, the air attack happened without incident, and they all got back safely. But boy, is this a bad deal. President Trump pretends to know nothing about it. Maybe he doesn't know anything about it. I don't know. But you're going to hear a lot more about that as the days and weeks go on, I'm sure. Just a really troubling and frightening breach of security in the highest levels of our government. That's a shame. Okay. Just, you know, to follow up on that, here's a 30-second guide to Donald Trump, the person. Okay. Whatever the situation, he will do or attempt to do whatever benefits him personally. That's been his track record throughout his business career. That's been his track record throughout his political career. For instance, right, you know, every presidential candidate, back as far as I can remember, always made their tax returns public. Well, he wouldn't do it. He was always promising to release them. Oh, they'll be released in 2 weeks in 2016. Well, they finally only became public because the House Ways and Means Committee received them via a Supreme Court ruling in 2022. Turns out he paid a lot less in tax than Tammy and I paid in those years, just, you know, FYI, the rich guy, you know. Looking ahead, just remember this simple truism. Trump will do whatever benefits him personally, not the country, not anybody else, him personally. That's been his track record through his whole business career and his whole political career. So don't guess. You don't have to guess. You know what he's going to do. All right, enough about him. Let's move on to the fun part of life, sports. First of all, our Then and Now Hoops contest. Through the first weekend of the men's and women's tournament, we now have results. We now have the Sweet 16 teams left in both the men's and women's NCAA basketball tournaments. In the men's tournament, only four conferences are represented in the final 16 teams. That's a really low number. Four Big Ten teams, seven from the SEC, four from the Big 12, and one from the ACC. That would be Duke, would be left. That's a low number, but that's who won. It's a big conference world out there now, I guess. In our contest on the men's side, your host and Alec Livingston are tied for first place in our contest on ESPN.com, with the great Tammy Shomo close behind in third place. Of the three of us, and that doesn't mean a couple of others couldn't win it, but I just looked at the top three. I have Houston going all the way, while Alec has Florida and Tammy has Tennessee. So that will certainly be a differentiating factor if we're close come Championship Monday. In our women's contest, Tammy Shomo leads after the first weekend. That noted women's basketball expert, Tammy Shomo. Jeff Cole is second, and Adriana Morquesho, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Adriana, is third. Tammy and Jeff both have the Connecticut Huskies winning, while Adri chose South Carolina, and those are both very possible winners. The bad news came last night, Monday night, as we record this. The great player, probably the best player in the country, Juju Watkins of Southern California, tore her ACL in the first quarter of their second round game last night, and is obviously done for the season, and her career in college is over. She'll have to have surgery probably today. She will not be playing this summer in the WNBA, obviously, with a torn ACL yesterday. It'll be interesting to see who drafts her in the WNBA draft, knowing that she cannot play this year due to injury. Just to compare, five conferences plus Notre Dame and Independent are represented in the women's Sweet 16, as opposed to just four conferences in the men's Sweet 16. So we're on a couple of days hiatus here from the games. The men's tournament will resume on Thursday. The women's tournament either Thursday or Friday. I don't remember when they restart, but nobody's playing today on Tuesday as we record this. Next up, the baseball season starts Thursday in earnest. I know we had the two games in Japan last week between the Dodgers and the Cubs, the Dodgers winning both of those, and they count. The Dodgers are 2-0, the Cubs are 0-2. Nobody else has started yet. Opening day for real, really, is this Thursday, March 27th, when all but two teams will be opening their season. Here are my predictions, and you can go a lot wrong with these, but I certainly wouldn't run down to my local bookie and follow my advice here. But for what it's worth, here are my predictions for each division in the baseball season upcoming. In the AL East, every team, it seems, has big injury problems. The Yankees, the Orioles, the Red Sox, etc. I'm going to go with Baltimore, just probably because I'd rather see them win than the other teams. Boston has a lot of injury problems. Chris Sale looks really good for them on the mound. He looks healthy, and they acquired Alex Bregman. The Yankees have tons of injury problems in addition to Gerrit Cole being out for the season. I think Baltimore might survive that group and win the AL East. That's my pick anyway. In the AL Central, four decent teams, and then the White Sox. The White Sox will try to win more than 41 games this year. If you recall, last year they were 41 and 121, 121 being the most losses in Major League Baseball history. Hopefully for their sake and for everybody's sake, they don't quite have to go through that again. Be nice if they won more games than 41 this year. But I think you can make the case for all the other AL Central teams, Detroit, Cleveland, Kansas City, and Minnesota. They all have a shot this year. I think it'll be a really good race between those four teams. They play each other 13 times, as you may recall. I'm going to pick, and this won't be a popular pick here in Northeast Ohio, I'm going to pick the Detroit Tigers. Skubal and Flaherty at the top of their rotation. They were good last year. If you recall, they lost a very competitive five-game series to the Guardians in the playoffs. I'm going to pick Detroit to come out of that. The interesting thing there is what happens with Emmanuel Clase, the Guardians' great closer. He can walk after this year. He's in the last year of his deal. Are they going to make a deal with him? Are they going to see where they are in August and maybe trade him? I don't know. We'll see. I'd be a little apprehensive about that if the Guardians were my number one favorite team. They're my number two favorite team. But I'm going to say Detroit wins. That's my prediction. In the AL West, it's crazy there also. It's in flux. If Texas's pitchers are healthy, they probably would win. Houston, are they on their last leg of being a competitive team? They have been for almost the last decade. They seem to be maybe kind of at the end of that run right now. Seattle has some good young talent. They've never played in the World Series. I don't know that they're going to make the World Series, but I'm going to go with the Mariners. Let's get out on the limb there, and I'm going to pick the Seattle Mariners to win the AL West. Moving over to the senior circuit, the National League. In the East, I think the Juan Soto acquisition by the Mets kind of puts them back on top. Atlanta's still got a very good team. The Philadelphia Phillies are a very good team. They could all three make the playoffs, but we'll go with the Mets to win the division title. In the NL Central, it's probably the most mediocre division in Major League Baseball, which maybe makes it a very competitive division, kind of like the AL Central as well. I think the Cubs and the Brewers are the best of that mediocre lot. My Pirates just have too many question marks for me to go with them. The Reds have Tito Francona, the best manager in baseball, but not a heck of a lot else other than Ellie De La Cruz, who's really a fun player to watch. St. Louis is finally rebuilding, and I don't think they should be a factor. It's a hard pick. I'm going to have to go with the Cubs. I hate that, but the Cubs, 85 wins may win that division. Let's put it that way. In the National League West, I think we have a clear favorite there. The Dodgers just have acquired so much talent. Unless it just all collapses, I think they're the clear favorites. Mookie Betts is a real question mark right now, though. He can't keep solid food down. He was not feeling well when they went over to Japan to play the games. He left Japan early and came home because he lost 20 pounds or 25 pounds. And he doesn't have the room to lose 25 pounds. He's a pretty sleek athlete. I saw an interview with him yesterday. He's all he can keep down are smoothies right now. He tries to eat solid food and can't keep it down. They don't really know what's wrong. That's really troubling. Hopefully he winds up being okay. He's one of the best players in baseball, former MVP. And in spite of that problem, which is a real problem, the Dodgers have so much talent. They're clear favorites in the NL West, I think. Pennant winners? We'll go with the Orioles and the Dodgers. How's that? Okay. A repeat of the 1966 World Series. And this time we'll pick the Dodgers to win. The Orioles won that one in four straight in 1966. Three shutouts by their starting pitchers. We'll pick the Dodgers to win over the Orioles this year. We'll look back on these predictions in September and October and probably laugh. But I had to go out there on the limb anyway and make some predictions. Now to our three good questions segment. What we're going to do this week is answer the three good questions that were posed last week. The first question was, name the five original members of the Mid-American Conference in 1946. And the hint was only one of the five is still a member of the conference. Here are the top five, the first five, I should say, the first five original members of the Mid-American Conference. Ohio University, that's the one, obviously, that's still there. Butler, University of Cincinnati, Wayne, which is now known as Wayne State College in Ohio, and Western Reserve University, now called Case Western Reserve. Those were the original five members of the MAC. Question number two, five men's basketball teams in Division I won 30-plus games and made the tournament this year. How many can you name? Well, here they are, UC San Diego, St. John's, Houston, Drake, and Duke. The second part of that question last week was how many will still be around by this podcast? The answer is two. Houston and Duke are still around. St. John's was beaten last Saturday. UC San Diego and Drake are out of the tournament as well. So it's Houston and Duke of those five 30-plus game winners who are still around. And question number three, obviously I had to look this one up. This is pretty tough. In the history of Cleveland weather, how many dates have never seen a temperature of 60 degrees or more? How many dates out of the 366 possible dates have never in Cleveland seen a temperature of 60 plus? The answer is two of them. Those dates are January 16th and February 1st. On those two dates, since we've been recording, and since the 1870s probably, Cleveland has never reached 60 degrees on January 16th or on February 1st. All the other dates, we've at least had one time in Northeast Ohio where we got to 60. That's interesting. Okay, we need some more good questions, folks, so please send us an email with a good question. It could be about anything. It can be a legit, hey, I'm wondering about something. Can you tell me what this is? Or it can be trivia, whatever the case may be. Send your good questions to our email address, threegoodquestions@gmail.com, just like it's spelled out on the logo, T-H-R-E-E, goodquestions@gmail.com. That is a loaded episode, I'd say, and we had to bag one of the topics I was going to talk about because of the national security issue that arose yesterday. I had to deal with that. So we'll be back at it next week. We'll be in April next week. How about that? So take care. Thank you for listening. You can get us on Spotify as usual. I'm your host, John Shomo. This is Then and Now. Everybody, please have a great and safe week. Thanks a lot.